Well, it is with great pleasure that I am going to introduce to you my friend, Neil Langsather, who is husband to Larissa. He's father of three daughters. But the reason that Neil and I have gotten to know each other is that he's also the associate pastor of family and youth at Bethel Baptist Church, which is located down in Almsville, where he's been for more than 10 years at this point. And so, Neil, I am excited to have you come and speak to us this morning. And as you come up, I'm going to let all the kids go off to junior church, which is, I think, why Paula was waving at me back there. I hope that was the reason she was waving at me back there.
Well, I think we're all used to people waving at us. Well, can you all hear me? It's great to be here today. Happy Mother's Day to all the moms out there. And frankly, to everybody, too, if you want to take happy Mother's Day. How many of you love puns, by the way? Is anyone a fan of puns out there? Good, you're in love. Now, some people think coloring
just for kids. It is not just for kids anymore, which is why there is a picture on the handout I had for you. And Matt tells me there is colored pencils in the back. So you will not be judged, at least by me, if you decide to color something in. Matt said I didn't have to do a specific Mother's Day message, so I took him up on that. Hopefully that's good. I really appreciated the trailer. That was exciting. But I still abbreviated the message, Mom. Because as I've been studying recently, I've been looking at the book of Exodus. How many of you love the Old Testament? Is there anybody out here that loves the Old Testament? How many of you aren't the largest fans of the Old Testament? It's okay. It's all right. That's good. How many of you love the character of Moses? Okay, good. He's probably one of the ones we know too. It's not a trick question. A trick question would be like this: what is the name of Moses' brother? Yeah, Aaron. Good. And that's not even a super hard one. What about his sister?
Miriam.
Okay. All right. People know who he is now. Just thought I better double check. So Moses is a central character of the Old Testament, really. And he's referenced a lot. There is one other character, if you're intrigued by this sort of thing, who was mentioned more than Moses, and that is King David in the Old Testament. He's the only one. Nobody else really comes even close. But Moses is interesting. How many of you, your primary knowledge of who Moses was comes from The Prince of Egypt or the Ten Commandments movie? All right, how many, if we're honest, realize that probably actually is more where our, for the younger ones of you, it might be VeggieTales, but actually that's kind of old now anyway. I'm not sure what the current one is. What I have found when I got the opportunity to speak, and I talk about the Old Testament a lot because our primary preaching teacher generally focuses on the new, so I like to mix it up, but sometimes it's kind of tough. And sometimes we have impressions of the characters of the Bible that they were amazing people that did amazing things because they were amazing. And that's not very true if you actually read the scripture. What you find when we read it and we take away the kind of myth part is that these are just normal people barely ever following what God says. They actually struggle with it all the time. And they're all called to tests of faith. Just of interesting note, usually in the scripture, when God says your name twice, the testing is about to begin. Abraham, Abraham, leave your country. Moses, Moses. It's a lot, actually. Samuel, Samuel. It's time for the test. In our passage today, we're going to look at Exodus 3 and 4. And just of note, there is a lot to be said from this passage. We're only going to look at one theme, which is, frankly, Moses' excuses. Moses gives five excuses for why he doesn't want to do what God asks. Unlike you or me, right? But Moses, he struggled with this. Now, some of us think that, let me just ask one more question as we get into it. How many of you, if you were picturing a hero, someone that needs to be a deliverer of a whole people from a hostile kingdom. How old are you casting that role as? What age would you pick for that person? How many of you would wait till you're actually Moses' age? You know, when he was 40, Moses was kicked out of Egypt for murdering a man, for murdering a slave driver, because he knew he was God's deliverer. But he wasn't ready yet. In fact, he wouldn't be ready until 40 years of being a shepherd in the desert. 80 years old is when Moses finally answered the call of God in his life. 80 years old. So I wonder sometimes, is it just because he was that stubborn? Or is it more like you or me? Is this because we're that stubborn that it finally took this occurrence to change the course of his life? Now, God was clearly working the whole time. Let's not miss it. But it does sometimes take a while, I think, for us to finally fully respond. Well, as Matt said, I have a wife and three daughters, so it is sometimes nice to be out of the house. They are normally, and they usually get along quite well, but I am always outnumbered everywhere I go, so that's just how it goes. That's how it goes. My eldest is Hermione. She's a freshman at Cascade Middle School over there in Turner. My middle daughter, Ariana, is a seventh grader, and my youngest is a fourth grader, and that's Lucy. She's 10, so she goes to Almsville Elementary. They all seem to like school, but they also like summer break. And I think they're all ready for summer break. And it's still a month away, but that's kind of who I am. Another thought I had is that next slide. The theme of our passage today, again, this is the last time I've really tried to press my metaphor of mom here, but that God's commission, it overcomes our misgivings, doubts, and fears by his presence. The actual theme of the whole book of Exodus is God's presence among us. God's presence among us. Even in the passage I'll read for us today, you'll note that term several times. I will be with you. I will be with you. I will be with you. You know, one reason I think the Old Testament in particular is so repetitive is that God's people for all of time have been slow to listen when he speaks and slow to take in everything he says when he tells us, I will be with you. I will be with you. It's also of, I think, good note, what is it said of Jesus at his announcement of his birth? One of his names is Emmanuel, God with us. God with us. Jesus, our true and greater Moses that leads us out of our sin and bondage to it. So just a quick recap, that next slide. Moses, believe it or not, as I was studying, I realized something. Did you know that Moses had a mother? Okay, so you guys might be in for a long message then. No. Moses did have a mother. Actually, it's in the very beginning of the story. He actually had a pretty good one because she preserved his life because of the hostile environment he was born to. During that time in their captivity in Egypt, they'd been there a long time, 400 plus years. And the people in charge weren't fans of these Israelites. They had grown in number. There was estimates maybe up to 1.5 million of them. The Egyptians were worried that they would side with their enemies and take over. So they started to persecute them in a mighty way. First by trying to get the little ones killed. And then when that didn't work, it's like throw them in the Nile if they were a boy. Moses was still placed in the Nile, but his mother put him in a basket to preserve his life. And it's just interesting of note that through God's hand in the first two chapters of Exodus, we see that Moses not only is preserved, not only does he actually raised by his own mother, but she was paid for it by the daughter of Pharaoh, by the daughter of Pharaoh. So Moses was actually raised by his own mother because of the circumstances God were orchestrated to make that work out. And it's just a beautiful story. It's also of note, just because it comes up in our day again and again and again, that there is two incredibly notable characters in the first chapter of Exodus, and that is the midwives to the Hebrew people. And they're named. There's not a lot of women, to be honest, named in the whole scripture. These two are mentioned because of their righteous acts, because they would not kill the infant baby boys. Just, I thought I should mention that because it really stood out to me this past week. God records their names for all of time so no one would forget what they did. And it's God always rewards and God always honors, at least eternally. We might not always feel it, but he always rewards, he always honors us when we stand up for righteousness and we stand up for his ways. So I just want to encourage us, let's make sure we do that too. So let me read our text for us. And I'm reading in a different translation that I see a lot of you are NIV people out there. My text on the screen is actually a newer translation. It's called the NET Bible, N-E-T. But go ahead and follow along or just listen. This is a long passage, but just note when I get to where it talks about Moses' excuses, because that's what we're going to look at today. Moses' excuses. And the simple truth is sometimes we give God excuses too. And I would urge us to maybe let's let God overcome our excuses by the promise of his presence. Meanwhile, Moses was shepherding the flock of his father-in-law Jethro, the priest of Midian. He led the flock to the far side of the wilderness and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. Then the angel of the Lord appeared to him in the flame of fire within a bush. As Moses looked, he saw that the bush was on fire, but it wasn't consumed. So Moses thought, I must go over and look at this remarkable sight. Why isn't the bush burning up? When the Lord saw that he had gone over to look, God called to him out of the bush. Moses, Moses, here I am, he answered. Do not come closer, he said. Remove the sandals from your feet, for the place where you are standing is holy ground. Then he continued, I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob. Moses hid his face because he was afraid to look at God. Then the Lord said, I have observed the misery of my people in Egypt, and I have heard their crying out because of their oppressors, and I know about their sufferings. And I have come down to rescue them from the power of the Egyptians and to bring them up from that land to a good and spacious land, one flowing with milk and honey. The territory of the Canaanites, the Hivites, the Amorites, the Perizzites, the Hittites, and the Jebusites. The Israelites' cry for help has come to me, and I have also seen the way the Egyptians are oppressing them. Therefore, go. I am sending you to Pharaoh, so that you may lead my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt. But Moses asked God, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and that I should bring the Israelites out of Egypt? He answered, I will certainly be with you, and this will be the sign to you that I have sent you. When you bring the people out of Egypt, you will all worship God at this very mountain. Then Moses asked God, if I go to the Israelites and I say to them, the God of your fathers has sent me to you, and they ask me, what is his name? What should I tell them? God replied to Moses, I am who I am. This is what you are to say to the Israelites, I am, has sent me to you. God also said to Moses, say this to the Israelites, Yahweh, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob, has sent me to you. This is my name forever. And this is how I am to be remembered in every generation. Go and assemble the elders of the Israel and say to them, Yahweh, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, has appeared to me and said, I have paid close attention to you and to what has been done to you in Egypt. And I have promised you that I will bring you up from the misery of Egypt to the land of the Canaanites, Hittites, Amorites, Perizzites, Hivites, and Jebusites, a land flowing with milk and honey. And they will listen to what you say. Then you, along with the elders of Israel, must go to the king of Egypt and say to him, Yahweh, the God of the Hebrews, has met with us. Now please let us go on a three-day trip into the wilderness so that we may sacrifice to Yahweh, our God. However, I know that the king of Egypt will not allow you to go unless he is forced by a strong hand. And I will stretch out my hand and strike Egypt with all my miracles that I will perform in it. After that, he will let you go, And I will give these people such favor in the sight of the Egyptians that when you go, each will not go empty-handed. Each woman will ask her neighbor and any woman standing in her house for silver and gold jewelry and clothing. And you will put them on your sons and daughters. So you will plunder the Egyptians. Then Moses answered, "What if they won't believe me and will not obey but say the Lord did not appear to you?" Then the Lord asked him, "What is that in your hand?" "A staff," he replied. Then he said, "Throw it on the ground." He threw it on the ground and it became a snake. Moses ran from it, but the Lord told him, "Stretch out your hand and grab it by the tail." So he stretched out his hand and caught it, and it became a staff in his hand. "This will take place," he continued, "so that they will believe that Yahweh, the God of their fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob, has appeared to you." In addition, the Lord said to him, "Put your hand inside your cloak." So he put his hand inside his cloak, and when he took it out, his hand was diseased, white as snow. Then he said, "Put your hand back inside your cloak." He put it back inside his cloak, and when he took it out, it had again become like the rest of his skin. "If they will not believe you and will not respond to the evidence of the first sign, they may believe the evidence of the second. And if they don't believe these two signs or listen to what you say, take some water from the Nile, pour it on the ground. The water you take from the Nile will become blood on the ground." But Moses replied to the Lord, "Please, Lord, I have never been eloquent, either in the past or recently, or since you have been speaking to your servant, because I am slow and hesitant in speech." But Yahweh said, "Who made the human mouth? Who makes him mute or deaf, seeing or blind? Is it not I, Yahweh? Now go, I will help you speak and will teach you what to say." But Moses said, "Please, Lord, send someone else." Then the Lord's anger burned against Moses, and he said, "Isn't Aaron the Levite your brother? I know that he can speak well, and also he is on his way to meet you. He will rejoice when he sees you, and you will speak to him and tell him what to say, and I will help you both and him to speak and will teach you both what to do. He will speak to the people for you. He will be your spokesman, and you will serve as God to him. And take this staff in your hand that you will perform these signs with." So that's our text today, and I realize it's a long one, but it takes a while for Moses to complain to God five times. He probably should have stopped earlier, but again, Moses, like you or me, was a man. He wasn't really a saint. He wasn't really special until he faithfully started following what God had for him, and it took a lot. By the way, if God calls you to lead a large group of people out of a land in your 80s, how many of you want to sign up for that job yourself? I'm just a little over 40, and I feel that's a little too much of a task. So I think we can sympathize to a point, but this is one thing we'll see again and again as we look at these real briefly, is that God's promise to be with him isn't the big deal. And that it has never been about you or me. It's always been about the God you and me serve and what he can do through us. And he can do through us through essentially a simple, "Yes, I will go." Note, Moses doesn't even really say yes. God just says, "Nope, go, go." At some point, he stops it. So let's just look at this one more time. So as we look at just the first excuse here in verse 11 of chapter 3, the first thing he says, "Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh, that I should bring him, this people, the Israelites, up out of Egypt?" The first part is just, "Who am I? Who am I? Who am I?" Which is interesting because of who he was. He was treated as the son of Pharaoh's daughter, which may have even indicated he was in line to the throne at one point in time in that history. But that wasn't enough. That wasn't enough. A human appointment to government was never enough for God's appointment to his task. And so we see he might have a reason for asking, "Who am I? Who am I?" Real quickly, God reminds him, "I am with you. Surely I will be with you. And the sign is, you will be here again." So until he leads that people out, he's not fully assured that it's actually going to happen, which I think does take a lot of faith. Of note, after this account, after chapter 4 closes, Moses is basically completely faithful to God for the rest of his story. He does do exactly what he says. One time he gets angry and he strikes a rock when he was told to do something else. But it's of note that there's no turning back for Moses after this. The more he walked and followed what God said, the more he believed, oh, God is going to do this. God is going to do this. Another thing I find is that, yes, Moses, like maybe some of us, apparently a little afraid of snakes. Note, he ran away when his staff became a snake. He ran away for a second from the presence. I found that kind of funny, to be honest. So God says, I will be with you. I'm Emmanuel. I will be with you. I will be with you. Just note, that's going to come up again. We often feel that we are not up to the call God has for us. But unless you forget, God is really good about helping us in every way we possibly need to complete the task he calls us to, because it's all about him and what he will do through us. It's all about him and what he will do through us if we will just take those steps of faith. Say that word we know we need to say. We can trust him. He says he'll be with us. More on that in a moment. He's going to come back to that again. The next one, of course, is he says, what if I go to the Israelites and they tell me God didn't send you? God isn't a part of this. This is just your ego. What if you go to them and that happens? By the way, is that a rational fear in our day and age? That if you could try to tell someone about, hey, you know, God is with me. He's called me to a life of faith, and I want to share about him. Do you think you're likely to get this response on occasion? God didn't call you. It's all in your head. Well, if you don't, I'm pretty sure you will eventually get this, this for someone. But just like Moses, for Moses' instance, we see that God reassures him. He reassures him that I am that I am is my name. You might recall, if you're a New Testament fan, Jesus uses that phraseology actually quite frequently, especially in John's Gospel. If it's been a while since you looked through John's Gospel, I'd highly recommend reading through it, maybe in a larger chunks at some point in the near future, because Jesus says the I am statements, I think, 7 times in John's Gospel, too. Just FYI. But good stuff. And they know what he's doing, by the way. They realize Jesus is equating himself as this character. They try to stone him at one point, maybe 2 points, actually, in the story. So they realize he's, quote-unquote, blaspheming and or just telling them the truth. He is God come in the flesh. And he is calling them out of how they've been to a true life of faith. Yeah. Anyway, it's good. It's good stuff in John's Gospel. So we see excuses, number 2, is if I go, they won't believe because they'll question who you are. They'll question who I am and who you are. So we often say, I don't know enough to speak. I don't know enough to speak. I don't know you enough, God. Usually when you're asking for a name, especially in like the Old Testament kind of frame of mind, a name was a descriptor of your character. The name is the descriptor of your character. So he's saying, really, I don't know your qualities enough. I don't know your qualities enough. It's where we get some of this idea that he's really partially saying, I just don't know you enough myself. But Yahweh says he has and is the answer. He has and is the answer. Note how he says it. I am who I am. Probably not the answer Moses was looking for, by the way, because what does God say there? I just am. I always have been. I always will be. I'm the eternally existent one. I have it all. I am. So he goes. So he knows that's what's going on. But he doesn't, our hero doesn't stop there. He tries again. First part of chapter 4, he says, if they do not believe me or pay attention to me, but say, here's this one, the Lord has not sent me to appear to you, what am I going to do now? Now, this is somewhat legitimate, actually, in that God gives him signs to perform. Now, I'm not sure if you had the opportunity to turn your walking stick to a snake, if you would use it or not. It's interesting, it doesn't record if he ever did his hand turning leprous or healed, but he does do the snake one, that appears later, and he does turn the Nile to blood. That was, by the way, adequate. Those signs God gave him to perform worked. The Israelites were with him once they saw those signs. They followed quickly. The only person that didn't get it was Pharaoh himself, who I think in this very section, God says, I'm going to harden his heart so that you can see my power displayed in the situation. But I find that really interesting. Those signs that God gave him from his hand and from his profession, if you will, were enough, were adequate for what he would have to do. I think there's something really special, so I'll just mention it briefly. He just asked, what is in his hand? What is it you do, Moses? By the way, there was nothing special in that stick. There was nothing special in that staff. It was just a normal piece of wood. But what can it do if given to God for his purpose? It convinced the people that God was calling them out of their bondage into a promised land. Promised land. It is also even referred to as the staff of God later because of all the works that happened through that and through faithfulness of Moses and the people as they followed. I think that's pretty profound. But I think there's a somewhat of a connection point for us too. What can God do with what's in our hand? What can God do with what he's given us? Both talent-wise, but also I think just position-wise. If we give it to him, if we follow him, I know he can do wondrous things if we're willing to give it to him. Give it to him. So it seems to me that that's what we see here. And it's a beautiful thing. God can take who we are and who he's made us to be with just a little faith and a little faithfulness, and it's going to have amazing consequences for his kingdom and for his gospel and for all that he wants in this world. So Moses is faithful in that. God answers that's one excuse. The third excuse, it's kind of interesting that he answers it by actually helping him out there. He gives him signs to perform. Not something God normally does, but I would recall all of you to think on this. You do have a testimony, don't you? You do have something that you know that, wait, this is when God was faithful to me. This is when he called me out of my former way of life. Never for a moment think that's not important. Never for a moment think that your story might not be the exact story someone else needs to hear that propels them to the next step of faith. I think oftentimes we believe we have to have a really grand testimony in our mind. But that's not God's way of thinking. That's our human, faulty way of thinking. So please don't. Always, I think we should always be moving more and more to a point where we want to share what God, not just want to share, but we're excited to see what God can do with our little faithfulness, So God, the Lord equips us to overcome this by both his power and his work in our lives. His power and work in our lives. I know if you're like my church, oftentimes we honestly believe we're a lot more like Mary Poppins than we think. Practically perfect in every way. Sorry if I'm pointing fingers here too. But to be honest, oftentimes I think God just needed to do a little bit to save me. I was so close. But that's wrong, isn't it? That is actually a wrong way of thinking. We actually weren't that close to God. Now, he is always near us. Please don't misunderstand. He is always near us. But that's not because of our own righteousness apart from him. That's because of his faithfulness waiting for us to turn. Oh, and I skipped over it. But when God calls him twice, that double thing from the bush, when he first climbed that mountain at 80, seems like an interesting time to start a career in mountain climbing. But when he finally got up there, the text says it was only when Moses actually went over to the bush that God called him. God was still waiting, and he could have missed that test if he didn't go check it out. But he did. And his life and the life of everything, all of us, has been changed because of that. So just note, Those steps of faith, sometimes you don't know what you're getting into. And we never fully know what we're getting into, but we do know the one we serve is good, and he'll lead us in his goodness for his kingdom. I meant to mention that earlier. I thought that was really profound. So yeah, the Lord equips us to overcome our doubts by his power and work in our lives. That is your testimony, and your testimony is very powerful because it is the story of how you have seen God enter and work in your life, and the stories of how others, you've seen God work and interact in others' lives too. Always a work of God. Always something, let's not forget, that angels rejoice over. That angels rejoice over. Yeah, so this power, those are some of the signs I think he gives us as Christians to say, this is what God did in my life. But Moses isn't done making excuses yet. He addresses God once more. He says, O Lord, I am not an eloquent man, neither in the past nor since you have spoken to your servant, for I am slow of speech and slow of tongue. And this one's a little interesting because it's hard to feel like Moses is correct here because he wrote these first five books of the Bible, and lots of them, especially Deuteronomy, seems to be more like in sermon form, like six or seven different sermons, and it seems pretty darn eloquent to me, but I won't tell Moses no. What I think is he probably lacked a great deal of confidence at this point in his life. How many of you feel like you lack confidence for certain tasks God calls you to? I think we all do. At least at some points in time, we all do. And this is where I think it's quite beautiful how God addresses this. God addresses this. Now note, I think Moses thought he was going to kind of winning the upper hand here because he mentions several things. He says, one, he's not eloquent in the past or now, but I'm slow of speech. I have a disability. I have a speech impediment. I can't be called to speak. But what does God say? How does God address it? The Lord said to him, who gave a mouth to man? Or who makes a person mute or deaf or seeing or blind? Is it not I, the Lord? So now go and I will be with your mouth. I will teach you what you must say. He's saying, I already got this covered. Didn't we already talk about it, Moses? Didn't we already talk about it? Yeah, we did. So it's just interesting to note, Moses tries again. He tries again to tell God no. Tell God he's not there. He's not able to. But this is one of those beautiful things, and this is a constant throughout Scripture. It's in the New Testament a lot too, by the way, where apparently God knew beforehand that a lot of us were going to say, I don't know enough and I'm not very good at speaking. Because he addresses it in the old and new that I made your mouth, I will give you the words to say. Jesus says that two or three, four or five times. In the word, when you need to speak, when you stand up for me, I will give you the words to say. I will give you the words to say. Part of how I see this now, as I age a little older, is that God is always inviting us to make steps of faith. He's always inviting us to make steps of faith. And we can respond positively, or we cannot respond. But we should respond positively. See what God will do with our humble words. But God doesn't really listen to Moses. He says, okay, I made your mouth. We've got this covered. And I think the last excuse gets to the true point of the message, or the issue Moses had, which is simply, please send anybody else. Yeah, I think it's intended to make us laugh. Just, hey, send someone else. Anyone else. Just not me. Just not me. Now note, also, this is the one time when it says God got a little angry. In fact, it says his anger kind of burned against Moses because he just reassured him four other times. This is how I will be with you. This is how I will help. This is how this will be accomplished through your faithfulness, through your following and being leading. Because I will be your God. I will be with you. I will be with your words. I will give you signs to perform. It's all there. And at the end of all that, he says, send someone else. Send someone else. So Moses clearly is rejecting of this, and this is why I think it's so interesting, is that what does God do from this? He just says, no, go. God doesn't really humor this much too much, though he does say, is it not your brother eloquent of speech? Which I'm a little intrigued on, but we don't have time to talk about that much. Just note how the timeline works. God had already impressed on Aaron to go seek his brother in the desert, because by the time Moses got down from the mountain, his brother was there to greet him with a hug. They may have not seen each other for 40 plus years, by the way, but God was working in Aaron's life too. By the way, God knew Moses was going to reject the calls and make excuses. He already had it covered, but he was still given the test. He was still given the test to say, okay, God, I don't think I can do it, but if you're with me, it can be done. However, that is what Moses did. He did go. And so just like for us, sometimes we know that God wants us to do certain things. How many of you are quite aware that part of our role as a Christian, as one that images Christ in that new nature that he's given us through his Spirit indwelling us, living with us, part of that is to share of his truth. And sometimes we're tempted to say, hey, don't send me, send Matt. I'm not qualified. I don't have the good words. No, do your people say you have good words, Matt? I'm not sure, but I'm sure they do. I'm sure they do. Kevin. Not me. Not me. Send somebody else. Send somebody else. I'm not qualified. That might be my phone, actually, Matt. Do you mind checking? I think my alarm is going off. Apparently, I'm speaking too long. So just to note, we always have a tendency to want to, and I didn't know I said it, so it's probably for something I'm late for, but whatever. It's just of chief importance to realize that, again, at the very end, God says, I will be with you. I will be with you. The angel of God speaking from that bush says, no, I will be with you. I've already sent your brother to meet you. He will help. By the way, God had already sent his brother. That's why I was mentioning. God had already prompted his brother to go. He already knew Moses was going to need help. He knows you and I need help too. He knows we need help. By the way, God's practice is very, very rarely one person by themselves. It's almost always a group, if not at least two. And God is pretty consistent on that. So Aaron was always there to help, but it could have been a little different dynamic, I think. So he goes. I have sent you. I have sent you. I will be with you. Your brother is here to help. If you want to look something up in the near future on your way home, I'd urge you to just check out Revelation 1:6 and 1 Peter 2:9. Both those verses just reiterate for us that this call was of God that Moses had is very similar to the call you and I have too. That's a Revelation 1:6 and 1 Peter 2:9. Just note that God is always about doing this. He's also always about giving us that opportunity to walk by faith like Moses, to walk by faith. And we might have less confidence at the start than we will at the end. That's always how it works. We will have less confidence at the start of that journey than we will as we, each step we take, each act of faith we follow through with, God's faithfulness is always there. And it emboldens us to keep doing it. God is probably not calling you to deliver any people out of physical bondage, but to be representatives that share of the spiritual bondage we could all be free from through a life of Christ. Isn't that good news? When you look around at your communities, do you see people in bondage? They're not literal chains, are they? But there are certainly chains there. Chains of addiction, chains of sin. They're there in spades. And God is still about it. We were singing about that, one of those great, great songs today. God is still about breaking those chains, freeing us from those things, and using us to help in that process. So his gospel, his good news is for us to share, both, I think, by the way, with each other in church, as well as with those that don't know him yet, because to be reminded of how God continues to work in our lives and has worked in our lives gives us extra motivation for doing that in all walks of life. Hebrews 11:16 says this, without faith, it is impossible to please God. If you're like me, you probably secretly desire sometimes to have it all perfectly in your head so you don't have to have any faith. But that's not how God ever set it up. That's why it tells us, without faith, it's impossible to please God. He still calls us to a life of faith. But you know this and I know this. God is always faithful. He promises to be with us, to equip us, to provide us the answers, to teach us his words. To teach us his words. Do you believe God is true? Do you believe God still is about doing what he said he's going to do? These are rhetorical yes answers, by the way, in case you weren't aware. Yes, Neil, yes. You're right. You're right. And it does not matter our age, young or old, our special abilities, our status, occupation, gifting. God has placed each of us in the lives of others to impact them for his kingdom or not. This is a stat. This is a stat in the world, but it's, I think, well to mention as I conclude. They say right now, especially if you're a younger person here, that your peers are 100 times more likely to listen to you than me. And I think that's pretty true of probably everyone 40 and under. They're listening for their peers to speak to them. They don't really care about the authorities anymore. They're listening. So I'd have to speak 100 times to that person that you could say once. So I just would like to urge us all to realize this was never meant to be just for professional speakers to share God's truth and God's news, but just to share the little bit you have with those around you and those that ask. That's our task. That's our calling. And you can have 100% full confidence that God will meet you both with the words to say and the time to say it. Let's look for those opportunities this week. And would you bow with me in prayer? Father God, I thank you so much that you are always faithful. I thank you so much that like you were faithful with Moses, you promised to be faithful with us, to our true and better deliverer, Jesus Christ, the one who went before us, that hung on the cross on our behalf, paid the entire penalty for our sin, past, present, and future, and is calling us to a life of faith, a life of walking, and a life of sharing in your kingdom. We ask, Lord, that you empower us to do that and give us those moments this week and in the weeks to come. For your kingdom and your glory forever and ever. Amen.